heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm Tracy Barnett, your host and narrator. Heroes, today we start a brand new series of 1,000-year-old Vampire. This series is being run by the one, the only, Super Dylan, and they have assembled an amazing, amazing cast of players. I can't wait for you to meet them. Let's get to the show.
Hi, I'm Dylan, or Super Dylan. I use she and they pronouns, and I am really, really thrilled to be here again on One Shot, and this time facilitating a game of 1,000-year-old Vampire, which is a game by Tim Hutchings that is made for either solo journaling, or there is an option, or several options actually, for versions of group play, one of which we're going to be doing tonight. And I'm joined by a group of really lovely people that I would love to hear introduce themselves and tell me how great and awesome and interesting they are. Why don't we start with my friend Christian?
That's me. Hi, everybody. My name is Christian, aka Fluffy Goomba, on several socials, mainly on TikTok and Twitch, where you can find me playing a variety of games with a variety of people. You can also find me on places like Total Party Kiss, where I play Ragna of the Ironclaw, Leonin Echo Knight Fighter on Sundays, 8 p.m. EST, for Tragedy Theologian. That's all you can find me at.
Do you want to vamp for your Power Rangers?
Long shot?
Oh, you should vamp.
My Power Rangers long shot. I'm making a nice three-part series for Power Rangers the RPG by Renegade Game Studios. And I've got two of my lovely cast members here already, and I am super excited. It's my first time really GMing, and I'm both terrified and very excited. And hopefully lots of kiosks and hi-yahs are happening during that process. And it's going to be wonderful.
It sure will be. Andre.
It's me. Hi, everybody.
My name is Andre. You can find me at Andre Rivera Art on Twitter and at AndreRivera.art, which is my illustration portfolio website, where you can also find a number of the series that I'm in, including Unicorn Hunt, which is connected to my thesis work for my drawing and illustration degree. Also on Tragedy Theologian alongside Christian on Sundays, where I play Kashmir, the Wild Magic Minotaur Barbarian Bastard Ex-Gladiator. You can also find me every other Wednesday on The Welcome In, playing with Dylan on The Atomless, which is also released following Wednesdays in podcast forms, wherever you listen to your podcasts, as Theoriac, a little garlic alien little guy. And also in a bunch of the long shots that we run on Total Party Kiss, which includes The Unicorn Hunt, which also includes The Red Line, which is currently being aired as we're recording, here by Dylan. Including the Power Rangers one shot, including other things in the future. So please check those out. And also check my Twitter if my commissions are open, because I am also an illustrator. You can draw your little guys, all your little guys. I'm also a he, they little guy. So.
Yes. Danny.
Hello. My name is Danny. You can find me all over the internet at Brutal Dan. That's BR00TALDAN. I am the internet's emotional support himbo, and I'm also the community manager for Roll20, and the community director for Free RPG Day.
Ooh.
Currently, you can find me every other Wednesday on the Friends Who Roll Dice Network, playing in Urban Shadows 2nd Edition, where I'm a fae, an emo fae fairy that just wants to collect plants and then drain them of their beauty to do magical things.
Oh my god. I did not know about this, and I'm very excited.
But yes, that's me. Find me on Twitch, Twitter, and TikTok, and I'm usually just trying to spread the joy of gaming, and I'm super excited to be here.
And Sarah.
Hello, it's me. Hi, I'm Sarah. My pronouns are they, them, and I exist on the internet as Sarah is Coffee. I am an LA-based content creator and actor, and I do a lot of things that are very fun. I am the social media manager currently for Hyper RPG and Fear HQ. And I can be also found on Total Party Kiss and The Welcome In, playing respectively a terrible, terrible wizard and a lovely little paladin. I'm also very excited about the game that I play with my friends over on Hunters Entertainment, Outbreak Undead. We're currently on a hiatus, so I won't give you any spoilers for what happened last season, but my character got a nice little name change, and something happened that made her quite interesting. And that's all I can really say, because that's as much as I know. But super excited to be here, super excited to play.
Yeah, me too. I guess I should also say that I am Super Dylan everywhere on the internet, and you can catch me on the Atomless on Wednesdays, live on the Welcome In, and also in podcast format, where it has been beautifully edited down by our wonderful GM and podcast editor, Matt Crail, into a beautiful little finely tuned show. And you can find me a lot of times on Thursdays on Total Party Kiss. Before we jump into A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, I have a little question to kind of get us in the mood for the game that we're going to play. Little icebreaker question, although this is a heavier icebreaker question than I think is normally the question. I would like to know for each of you, is the idea of immortality a tempting idea for you or a terrifying one? Or something in between. But I just am curious if that sounds like a good time or a bad time.
It's extremely tempting. The bane of every artist is not having enough time. So if I could just have forever time, that would be awesome.
That
does not solve a lot of the problems of being an artist, though. So don't know if it's actually worth it. But more time to do things is good. And then, I don't know, you just vibe until the heat death of the universe. I don't know.
I play with that concept a lot in my characters because I really like the idea of immortality. However, I usually view it as either a burden or an obligation, because I feel like the thing with living forever is that you get to see history happen over and over and feel that responsibility, which is really big. So personally, wouldn't love it. Love making my characters go through it.
Interesting.
I think as a storyteller, I'm always clamoring to just hear more and be able to tell more stories. So having the time to both experience stories and hear other people's stories is an interesting concept. Wouldn't do it personally. That sounds terrifying. I would love to see someone else go through it. Maybe.
I'm already tired.
I'm tired. I'm tired thinking of the concept. I think my body would need a break, an eternal break. I don't think eternity sounds all that fun. Because, like Sarah said, it feels like you're watching history and you'll watch it repeat itself several times over until the heat death in the universe, and then you're still alive.
I don't know. I think it'd be fun because then you, if you're watching history change over and there's, if the idea of immortality is a thing, you could try to use your curse and or blessing for good and try to change things. But I do feel the sense of like the idea of an ending makes things more exciting when you know that you don't have forever to play with. So I don't know, you probably get bored, so then you would have to find weird ways to get excited again, which is an exciting prospect because you can do, again, whatever you want.
I feel like we're going to discover that today.
I think we might. I am in rare form, but I am very intrigued and tempted by the concept of immortality. I am driven in this life singularly by FOMO. If I could turn off the need for sleep, I would do it in a heartbeat, in a second. Every second that I'm not experiencing life, I'm mad about it. So
does that mean you don't like sleeps and naps? Because oh man, I enjoy those so much.
I am there with you, Danny. I will pass right out.
Honestly, I love the idea of me closing my eyes.
I'm getting FOMO about naps.
That part. Yeah,
I love the idea of closing my eyes and time traveling for a couple hours. And,
oh yeah, that's the best kind of sleep where you just like blink and it's the next day and it's like, whoa, that did I sleep?
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I do sleep quite a bit and I have a lot of trouble waking up from sleep, but I hate it conceptually because I hate that I've been gone for all those hours. I want to be here. So that's my take. Are we ready to be vampires? Are we ready to be immortal?
Yes.
So in this version of the group play version of A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, which traditionally is played as a solo journaling game, but the book does give you multiple options for a group play experience. So we will be playing a group of vampires who do know each other at the start of the game. We will experience some passage of time individually and then come together and meet after we've gone through a couple of the prompts to see what has changed and what has passed. In order to create our vampires, first you're going to think of a person from the distant past. We do not need to all have been born in the same time period. It can be from wherever. It just means that at some point or another, we all met each other and decided that we were besties. So say I would like to play for this game. I would like to play like an 1800s midwife, like somebody who would have like in her mortal life have lived in the woods and like been definitely thought to be a witch. I think that's the general concept of her mortal person that I'm going to create. You build this character by building first like the very first experience, which is like what I just said. It is her life before becoming a vampire, which is that she lived in the woods, was thought to be a witch, and gave general reproductive health care as appropriate in the 1800s. That experience is going to like come into play in terms of creating memories for these vampires. Does anybody have a vague idea of what kind of vampire they'd like to be?
Yes. Just for the podcast purposes, just imagine me nodding my head very excitedly. I can go first unless anybody else has their idea primed and ready to go.
I have to do some primary research on the.
Oh, I know. I was typing things up on my phone. The era to look I'm at certain at. Eras. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that my character is someone who was probably young, late teens, early 20s, in the time when Shakespeare was doing most of his writing.
Mm-hmm.
The concept that I kind of want to play with is someone who wanted to embody the roles that men had in the time and had to disguise herself as a man, was a cis woman, had to disguise herself as a man to do the things that mm-hmm. she wanted to do, and then got to witness the changing of an era and step into those roles as her true identity as times changed. I think that's a very fun idea. So definitely also lived through the piracy era and was a pirate because, yes, please.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Excellent. So we've got 1800s midwife. We've got...
That would be the late 1500s, early 1600s would be when she was turned.
Perfect. 1500s. Any ideas for a name yet? Not, you know, you could think of.
I like the idea of Anne.
Anne is good.
Would probably use Alexander when posing as a man.
Okay, excellent.
Looked up the person I'm going to be emulating, or the era I'm going to be emulating. I've chosen a Shaka Zulu kind of like medicine man who, early 1800s to like late 1700s. Kind of era. Medicine man, and in the modern era, they would be like a doctor or a physician. They spent their life looking for cures to all diseases mm-hmm. and eventually came upon vampirism as a way to both accomplish that goal and be healthy beyond what normal medicine could do.
Ooh, yeah, that's a... it's a juicy motivation, the doctor that wants to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen all the disease and you would like to opt out, please.
Yes, please. That stuff looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, none for me, please.
I have a question about vampirism. as a thing. Ooh, could my character be born as a vampire as opposed to being turned into a vampire?
Okay, so that is a great question because I could definitely see some games having that. But in this game, it is necessary for you to have a character in your backstory that is the person who made you a vampire.
Okay. Give me a little bit more time.
Okay. Well, Christian, do you have a name in mind for your character?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go and say Najee. So that's N-A-J-E-E.
J.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yep, yep, yep. And okay, cool. I guess yeah, Yancy would be the last name. Y-A-N-C-Y. Yancy.
Cool. Okay. I'm going with Alice for my name also, for my midwife character.
I do have a concept. So my character was born in the Yucatan during Spanish colonization in the 1500s and was turned into a vampire as part of the sort of initiation rites of the group that worships Kamatzatz, the Mayan bat god, and has struggled to continue to keep up that aspect of their heritage.
Mm, cool. Any name in mind?
Not yet.
Okay. Danny, you got any thoughts bubbling?
Yeah, I think I want to take this. I mean, it's not too far back, but can I do like 1980s?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be like a historic.
New one.
Right? Yeah.
Oh my God. You're our new little baby vampire
Yeah.
That we all just collected.
Yeah. So I think it's important that it's in the 80s where my character didn't have the internet to research and stuff. And sure. They were a huge, almost like a conspiracy theorist, where they questioned everything and they were like, there's no way that the supernatural cannot be real. If we live in a world like this, there's like humans cannot be the superior. Like, there's no way.
Oh,
God, yeah. This is one of my favorite tropes. To the truth.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite tropes in the world, is person who absolutely believes that the supernatural or science fiction exists and then it's proven happens. Right.
Exactly.
Oh, God, that's what I want to happen to me, universe. Yeah. Good God.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And yeah, I think they're probably like mid-40s. They've kind of spent their adulthood, their early adulthood, just like trying to prove something somehow, and then they finally get the chance to become what they've assumed was real the whole time. And I think Winston is the name. Winston immigrated over to Vancouver in Canada. They love to theorize in the woods, and you can only imagine their little hut or their cabin just hoarder like all these different types of references in the house, books upon books. They don't even like to read, but they think one day they're going to be able to prove something with these texts that they've collected over time.
Incredible. Everything that you all just said, these concepts of what your character was before they were a vampire, that's going to count as your first memory in terms of how this game works mechanically. You get to pick 3 skills for each of your vampires that you have and 3 resources that they obtained while they were still mortal. This is like really, it can be anything. You're going to create and lose them as the game goes on in both of these. So can just be completely random. Like, I'm going to say as a midwife, my skills are definitely going to include things like herbalism. I imagine that I was very good at hiding also from witch hunter type folks, and that I probably also have some skills in gossip, probably. I'm probably very good at gossip. And then I will say I'll give myself resources like a medicine bag. I'm going to actually also give myself like a really well-constructed bone knife too, that I probably used to defend myself on occasion back before I lost my mortality. And then as another resource, because these can be big or small, I am going to give myself the resource of like a whisper network. So when I was still alive, I had like the ability to send word to like the women of other villages. And I retain that at least for a little while after I lose my life. So everybody gets to create those same three type of things. So like three resources that you have and three skills that you have.
Okay. So my character's name is Santiago. I'm going to say that Santiago played ball court. So is quite athletic, is multilingual, starts off speaking Spanish and Quiche. And I would like to do something more mystical. I'm going to say can like kind of teleport through shadows.
Cool.
Terrifying.
What was the first one you said? Multilingual, teleport, and then I missed
Athletic.
Athletic, okay. Yeah. And then what about three items you have?
Santiago has one of the last remaining copies of the Popolva.
Mm-hmm.
Has an old lucky coin, and I think jade necklace.
Cool. All right. Anybody else got any trinkets, things they want to have?
Winston, again, living in the woods with a lot of these things. I think the three skills that Winston has had is night vision. They can see in the dark very well. They're accustomed to the night, the darkness. They keep their cabin super dimly lit. Also good at climbing. They have good grip strength just from forging through the woods, carrying logs. Massive, thick forearms. And they also have an iron stomach, so they eat whatever.
Ooh.
Whether it's random foliage that they find, fungus, animals, bugs. And I think the three resources, it's still on the fence, but they've collected these almost like movie type props that have these like immaculate names. So they haven't proven that they've worked yet, but Winston has an amulet of invisibility,
mm-hmm.
a crystal of speaking, and a ring of the tundra. And he just keeps them on his person all the time. Doesn't know if anything actually works, but does that mean the crystal speaks? Who knows?
Who knows? I sure don't.
I don't either.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to the Midroll. Heroes, we just want to take a quick moment to thank you for listening. We hope that you are enjoying the content that we put out. We hope that everything that we are able to do brings you a slice of joy in your life. And we hope that if you really, really, really enjoy what we're doing, you can head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and throw us some support. Thanks, heroes. Now, let's get back to the show.
So, Anne's skills. The first one is swordplay, because she had to learn very early on to take on the roles that she had. I don't know if this is gaming the system a bit, but this isn't, I feel like, a vampiric skill. This is like a human skill that translated over. A good memory, because, back then you had to memorize your lines in one day.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty sharp memory. And the one that goes a little more supernatural is she was very good at deception in life and in undeath. It has become an uncanny ability, kind of a waving the hand in front of the face, making someone think that they saw something else.
Right.
Excellent at deception.
Oh, excellent. I do like when supernatural creatures have like abilities that are just heightened versions of what they were already good at a little bit. It's very fun. Mm-hmm.
As for her resources, she starts out with an actor's kit, so like paint and things like that that you would use in order to become your characters. Mm-hmm. A rapier, because everyone carried one back then. And original Shakespeare texts, but only her lines, because that's how they were written back then.
Good.
You didn't get the full folio.
Is that true?
Yeah, every actor would only be given their lines specifically, and like the two or three words that led into their lines, and often wouldn't even get to like put them on their feet before they acted. Wild times.
Very wild.
Yeah, podcast, you're going to get some theater history, because that was part of my major.
And you said Anne and Alex when Alex is.
Yes. When she is like dressed as a man, she goes by the name Alex or Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I guess it's up to me now. I've been doing lots of research trying to figure out what I should pick.
Fantastic.
I'll start with skills because I'm still kind of thinking about the items. Skills, I'm going to say he gets visions, like shaman and medicine and before him, medicine men and women. His perception is very high considering he is like either perception or insight, watching people's reactions to medicine to make sure to see if things are working, to see if like how people are reacting in the space he's in. And the last skill, because medicine seems to be the name of the game here, I'm just going to just say he's good with chemicals and elements and alchemy.
Love that.
So as for items, he's got a alchemist kit. If this is like pre, he's got an alchemist kit. I believe it's called an ikiwa, which is like a sword or a dagger made of like stone or bone. And he's got a pan flute.
Ooh, I love
for rituals and stuff.
I love that very much. Okay, we then now get to do something together as a group. We get to create our three mortals that we know as a group of vampire friends. Who are the three humans that we all keep around or like have a little relationship with? They can be anything. They can be people that we go to for resources. They could be friends, lovers. They could be enemies. They can be literal living relatives from before we became vampires. Anything that you would like.
Now, are these our collective three that we have together?
Yeah, they can be like related more to one of our characters if we would like, but the agreement will be, I guess, that we all know them.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I would like a twin brother.
Oh my god. Wish granted. Happily, you have a twin brother.
So it's Santiago and Sandalio.
Writing down the names.
I think actually I would love it if we did at least have one of these be an
enemy.
Oh
yes, please. Could I pose one?
Please.
Could we have an enemy that is like one of the lawyers that tried to get you burned for being a witch?
Oh, 100%. Sarah, okay. My absolute darling.
Very much like, turns out you weren't a witch, but you were something else, and he's still after you, you know?
Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
What would his name be? Something very waspy.
Waspy and Protestant.
Featherington.
Featherington.
You know what? Yeah, Featherington.
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 Daniel Featherington.
Daniel Featherington.
Daniel Featherington. God,
and he will not stay. Like, you have to say first and last name. He will.
You have to. 100%. Yes.
Yeah.
One of us starts calling him, like, something
Danny?
Like Featherboy, just to piss him off.
It's Daniel Featherington.
Featheringson?
Featherington! Daniel Featherington!
Featherington. Gotcha.
I don't know why I thought of this, but I just thought of just kind of like a park ranger and or somebody that is good for resources, that is kind of our go-to, like, hey, we need to find somebody, or we need some sort of item. Ooh. Can you go find it?
Or hookup.
They're just, yeah, our hookup.
A hookup person. Character. Okay, yeah.
Our daytime plug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so it's like, so, all right, I don't know how much use we need from a park ranger, but
that's how we met them.
Okay. So they work for like local government or something like that. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, maybe they have like 1,000 jobs. Like, weren't you just a mail person, or weren't you just a chef?
Yeah, and I'm working at the bodega.
They work for local government, and they got like the curfew for businesses to stay open pushed back at a certain
yes.
time.
Yes.
Like a night owl, like ordinance. Or amazing. Something.
We've got a jack of all trades. Can his name be Jack, please?
Of course. Jack Trade.
Jack Trade, we're going to call him. This wonderful guy who does these beautiful favors for us.
I feel like he always says yes, but he might not always deliver what we asked for, but he thought he did a very good job. He's doing his best. He's doing his best.
A good person. Good lad. Just doing their best.
Good just lad. A good lad. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. All right. So Jack Trade, I feel like we all have a very good business relationship with. Is Jack just interested in us because he's like keen on being in on the neat secret, or does Jack need something from us in return, do we think?
Does Jack want eternal life? What's all of our vibes on turning people? I feel like that's an important thing to establish.
Mine is like heavily in favor.
Okay.
Mine thinks of it as a last resort.
Okay.
Santiago probably imagines it to be a very like personal decision.
Yeah.
Winston has not turned anybody yet and is kind of scared to, but also it's like kind of wants to. Wants the experience, doesn't know how to parse it out yet.
I think Winston. Alice has done it. Anne, that's your character. Anne has done it, but does not enjoy it. But since we have people in favor, I feel like we shouldn't do that he wants to turn, because he already probably would be turned by now then.
That is true. That is true. Otherwise, we're creating a little bit of a scenario where we're really stringing
we're
this guy along.
We're just being real mean. Which, I mean, we could what we do in the shadows. This
much. Yeah.
I just binged that, so that's
it's
like
so awesome. Good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, if he works for the government, maybe... we protect him in case anything, like if the government comes after him or, you know.
We sway his political campaign for
if,
him.
If he has bullies at work.
Exactly. <Ooh. laughs>
You're not going to bully our Jack.
This is our Jack.
We are his goons.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. All right. So we've got a mutually beneficial symbiotic relationship with Jack Trade. Daniel Featherington, obviously, is an enemy. You know, he's probably not one of the ones that wanted me burned at the stake when I was still alive, because that was a really long time ago. But this does happen to me still, because I still insist on living in the woods and being a little creep, that occasionally I do still get witch hunters. So this is sort of like an aging witch hunter.
Amazing.
Guy who's just like really bothersome.
And he could have lineage, like his great-grandfather could have been.
Oh my god, wait, what if it's a line of Featheringtons that keep, like, passing down to hunt you?
Yeah, oh my god.
Because you're the one that got away. And they still think you're a witch. You're the one that got away.
Yes. I'm the one that got away from the Featherington.
And embarrassed them somehow.
Only with the finest eagle feather can you destroy an unbeliever. And it fully is just not true at all.
Just bad.
It's just
and they think that there's like a curse on them. Like ever since we couldn't catch this one witch, our family, their name has been besmirched. And it's like, y'all are just bad.
It's just bad people. It's just a bad name. It's not a clean name.
Featherington. Like, I've told you 1,000 times, you just have to stake me in the heart. I'm not gonna let you, but like that's all it is.
It's that.
No? It's not that difficult.
It's not. There are movies now that explain it in great detail.
Yeah, it's all been really well exposed.
They're just really convinced you're lying.
And then Andre, for Santiago's twin brother, do we all have like a friendship? Relationship? What kind of relationship does the group as a whole, do you think, would have with?
I think Sandalio is very much like, I think Santiago has a lot more of like a reserved nature and like is very careful, understanding like that like immortality and vampirism is very like a very meticulous sort of thing. But I think Sandalio is very like blasé about it, a little bit more reckless. So people will report seeing Santiago doing dumb things and he's like, no, that's not me. That's my twin.
That's my evil twin.
That's my jackass twin brother. Don't listen to him.
Okay. With that, I think that Anne is often very annoyed by Sandalio.
Okay. Fantastic. So we are almost done with the creation of our little group. What we do need to do, so your first memory is the memory of what you were before you got turned into a vampire. You get two other memories to start. They can be very brief things like, I took a voyage once across a great sea, things like that. I will say for Alice, her other two memories will be sharing a freshly baked hot apple pie with a family, like somewhere she met in the woods. And as a vampire early on, before she met all of you, she absolutely did a little bit of exploring and saw the seven wonders.
Aww. I will say, well, Anne's memory first is the one of being an actor. It wouldn't be me if I didn't make this a little gay. So please. The second memory is going to be like on the high seas when Anne shared her first kiss with a woman and tumblers clicked into place. And that was after being turned, of course, many, many years later. Took a long time. And the final memory I'll say is a more recent one. The first time she ever walked into a corporate office and the interview that she had in order to get the job.
Oh my God. That makes me feel so deeply sad. Like, the idea of being a vampire and going into an office interview feels so upsetting.
It's wonderfully mundane, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, no. All right. So anybody else have some ideas for memory?
Is it three memories?
Three total. The first one is the memory of who you were. So you've already said that one. So your memory as Winston your first memory is being a conspiracy theorist in the pre-internet age, trying to prove the supernatural's real. And then you get two other memories. They can be before you were a vampire or after. Anything you like.
Yeah, I think one of the first ones was he remembers having a picnic with his mom's lakeside, and he was very young, maybe like 3 or 4. And across the lake, he saw a furry bipedal creature holding hands with a swampy fish-like creature. And this memory has stuck with him, and he's been trying to explain it to his moms for a while. And they're just like, oh, Winston, you joker, you.
That was me and Alice. We're so sorry.
And I think the next one was maybe after he turned and he was trying to spill the beans, maybe to someone he cares about, maybe his mom's, maybe like he,
right.
they, I'm assuming they don't believe in the supernatural because he's grown up. He's had all these ideas in his head and he's tried to sit down with his moms. His moms now are very elderly people. And this one time he just remembers trying to tell them and they just, again, treat him like the little kid that he was when he was 3 or 4. Like, oh, you're so silly. And that memory, that was the last time he saw them. So,
oh my God.
So now his moms are passed. I just made that up.
Okay.
The memory was him trying to tell his moms that, yeah, I'm a vampire. And they didn't think anything of it. They thought Winston's just being Winston. And then they passed away. So, again, very queer.
Deeply queer, deeply heartbreaking. I love it.
Yeah, honestly, how dare you?
So I've got my three. The first one is, of course, just living, just learning from his old witch doctor. Or shaman mother, grandmother, learning that, and learning the trades, and learning that you can save life as quickly as you can take it. Second memory, or if we're all gonna go kind of sad and stuff, is escaping capture, and instead of going across to the Triangle Trade, heading west and going towards Europe and Germany, and China and India, and learning their medical trades, and then the third memory is finally coming to America. And working in a hospital in an impoverished neighborhood because the people look like him again.
So, it's pretty beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, so my three memories are exclusively the memory of just the initiation into the Kamatsat sect.
Mm-hmm.
when he was young. Sarah, I also had a ship thing, like a maritime thing.
Ships.
Having nearly died in a Caribbean shipwreck and surviving on an island alone for some time. And then sometime in the 20th century, going to an opening, like an exhibit opening at an archaeological museum and seeing the artifacts from when he was younger, but not knowing the cultural significance of a lot of it and being confused by that.
Yikes, yeah.
Bunch of sad kids.
Well, we're sad, everybody.
It's so sad, so fast.
History's not fair to us.
We're having fun. We're bopping around. Mean. We're joking about witch hunters. Heartbreak.
Okay, last two things, and then we actually get to role play, and I'm so, so excited. One, we get to create our immortal, the person that made us a vampire. And you get to create a mark. Your mark being something that once you became a vampire made you slightly different from humanity. It should be something that you need to conceal somehow in order to stay hidden. So eyes that are like sclerated out, literal wings, anything that you would like your character to have that distinguishes them from humanity somehow, and how you have concealed it.
I think Santiago has larger bat-like ears and typically conceals it just by having long hair, like long voluminous hair that just covers it up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try to avoid situations where like that can be like revealed, like won't go out on like windier days or anything like that. We'll is a bit of an indoor kind of person nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I think also maybe has more of like a bat-like nose, kind of like the smushed nose.
Yeah.
And so nowadays we're like a prosthesis.
Okay. So you got long hair to cover the ears and a prosthesis that you put on to cover the nose.
Mm-hmm. And who's your immortal, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Who's your immortal?
I think this would be very juicy if the immortal that changed me was not actually someone from the Camelot sect, but a Spanish, like, spy who did a different one-on-one rite that was actually Catholic in origin. And that's why it's so fucky with Santiago, is because it's not the actual practice that is from his culture.
Right. So it, like, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the person who turned him was none other than his grandmother, the woman he learned everything from, as she's the one who taught him that this is a last resort rule. And when she used it on him, she explained that exact principle. And when he felt his heart stop, but he was still alive, he understood what she was talking about. And while he went west, while he went east, she went west. So she went straight to America, while he went everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that points out that he is not all that human anymore is he does have sclera, blackish eyes, blacked out eyes. And during his travels, he discovered, I believe it is in China or Asia, sunglasses, and he wears sunglasses to block people from looking at his eyes.
Cool. You found a way to make him very badass.
Mm-hmm. Very badass.
Very, very proud.
I am going to say that Anne's immortal was, now I'm going with a real historical name here, so nobody come for me, is George Hastings, the 4th Earl of Huntingdon.
Okay.
And the reason I think this is like old gentry kind of nobility, an appreciator, a patron of the arts, also a vampire, who discovered Anne's secret and had seen the times change and in his lifetime and was like, I'm going to give you this gift so that you can watch the times change and maybe find a place that you actually, like, belong. Thinking that he was giving a gift, maybe not so much of an actual gift.
Yeah.
And Anne has claws. Not like, oh, they grow and protrude from the tips of her fingers, but, like, the last phalange is actually replaced by a sharp protrusion. And she wears gloves.
Very cool. Alice was turned. There was a girl that she had helped with her services many years before. Unfortunately, later on, some group of witch hunters did technically catch her and set her up to be hanged. And this girl had since become a vampire and came and repaid, I guess, the favor years later by turning her at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a consequence of the way that she died, her physical change is that, like, the scarring from where she was hanged as a witch is, like, ever bleeding. And so she covers that up with a thick scarf that she wears all the time.
Creepy. I love it. Mine's a little more campier.
Love it.
Again, Winston, kind of this hermit conspiracy theorist, super big into horror movies, of course. And I think he had a girlfriend that he actually opened up to about his, like, wild and crazy conspiracy theories, and she would kind of humor him. And it turns out her name was Cassandra, aka Elvira, the Mistress of Dark. But but this was before the Mistress of Dark Elvira character came. Cassandra Peterson was the person that...
Are you telling me right now that you were made by the...
Well, Elvira? So here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? So when he turned... He doesn't have, like, a huge memory. So for him, it's very fuzzy, and he doesn't know if it was actually Cassandra. All he has is a note left on his nightstand that just says, "You'll thank me later, bloody heart Cassandra." And that's
it. Oh my God.
And ever since then, he's never seen Cassandra again. He was heartbroken. He didn't know what to do. And yeah, that's... That the thing is, he's trying to piece it all together. For whatever reason, he hasn't mustered up the courage to go talk to Cassandra about this thing. And I think for him, he's pretty new to things, and he looks relatively normal. He kind of has these, like, really thick glasses that over exaggerate how big his eyes actually are. And I think he has heterochromia. And the two different iris colors, but they always shift. So, like, they're never the same. And if you try to call it out, he'll just be like, "No, they're the same. I've always had one red and one blue." And then the next day it might just be like brown and yellow. So
incredible. Absolutely wonderful.
This episode of One Shot features music from the following artists. Your Story Is Not Yet Written by Late Bloomer. This episode of One Shot was edited and sound designed by Tracy Barnett. You can find more of their work online, anywhere, at The Other Tracy. That's it for One Shot this week, but don't worry, we'll be back next week with part 2 of Thousand-Year-Old Vampire.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.
As always, we end One Shot with a call to action, and this week, heroes, I want you to think about energy. You see, the reason the episode is late this week is because here in Central Ohio, where I live, we had a series of power outages, and obviously, a lot of things have been going on with climate change and with infrastructure, and there's a lot of interactions that have been predicted to happen, and the people who are in charge, be they politicians or business owners, haven't done anything to fix a lot of the problems. So, I would like you to do what we often ask you to do, and call your representatives. Head to 5calls.org, make your voice heard. They have scripts you can follow, and you can cover any issues that are important to you. This one, currently pretty important to me and important to a lot of people around the country. If there's something that's more pressing for you, call, use your voice. Thanks, heroes. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out some of the other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games, except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was a hot wing. Come on. Find their shows at SystemMasteryPodcast.com.
As always, a humble and hearty thanks to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to help us in a non-monetary way, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Every 5-star review we get helps new people find the show. For the latest OneShot news, be sure to follow me on Twitter at OneShotRPG. Look us up on Facebook at facebook.com/OneShotPod, or look for news on the site at OneShotPodcast.com. If you want to inquire about ad rates, live appearances, commissioning episodes, or you have a general question or comment for the show, contact us at gamemaster@oneshotpodcast.com. One Shot is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network, in association with Paracosm Press. Paracosm Press is a Chicago-based tabletop games publisher. You can find more information at paracosmpress.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Adventure by Be Your Own Pet, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes.